can survive if I let you.
Let the new era begin. The era of the ECW.
Oh my God.
Greetings, ECW fans, and welcome to This Is Extreme, an ECW history podcast. This is the podcast that we dive into the history of ECW by speaking to everybody, right? Anybody we can talk to, right? Wrestlers, talent, cameramen, producers, anything, right? Anybody that was associated with ECW, we like to chat with, and today is no different. We are being joined by Michael Archer, who's a former employee of Acclaim, who has directly had involvement with ECW in the production of their two video games. Now, you might remember a while back, probably a year or so ago, we had the Extreme Gamer on. We talked about the ECW video games, and we talked about it from our side, from the fan side, and what we thought of it, and the play of the game, the end result, the marketing materials that was out there, the merchandise that was out there, and the memories associated. We got that side of the story, right? And that was a lot of fun. So go back and check that out into the archive. And thanks once again to the Extreme Gamer for doing that. And I also need to thank him very, very much for, he really helped me come up with these questions for today. Actually, he came up with the majority of them. Because, again, I'm no fool, right? I love ECW. I know my fair share about it. And I like the video games, but I'm not what you would call a huge gamer. And while I had the games when they were out and everything else, I didn't view myself as the predominant expert on the topic. The Extreme Gamer, he is, right? So I went to him and said, hey, with you being such a no pun intended, hardcore collector of the games and the associated materials and marketing stuff and all that, what are the questions you would ask Michael? You would ask about this side of it. And he sent me, man, he sent me a list, right? And they were great questions. I tweaked a few. I added a few. And we went with it because they were the kind of questions that should have been asked, right? He knew that the questions to ask about the production of it, the marketing of it, the release of it, the transition, the changes from one game to the next, the reasons behind, you know, why the license was, you know, ended and whatnot. So thank you again to the Extreme Gamer for all your help with this. It really added a so many levels to this and made it such a more meaningful and informative interview. And I really hope you guys will enjoy it. It is a great interview, right? I hope you enjoy where we talk about some of this side of things, some of the more production, right? You know, there's plenty of talent, plenty of wrestlers out there to talk to about their experiences and stories, and that's great. But what about the people on the other side of the camera and the other side and of the production and the running of a promotion like this and the growth of a promotion like this? And I find these interviews so fascinating to get this side of the story. So we got that coming up in a minute. Before we get there, really quick, what are a podcast platform you listen to? And we're available on pretty much all of them. Please make sure you subscribe to us, set your notifications so that you know when a new episode drops every 2 weeks. If the option is there, give us a rating and review. That helps us network, helps us with those algorithms, helps us to grow. And then make sure when these are released, right, that you share the episodes, help us spread the word. You guys are our greatest tool for growth and, you know, expansion as we try to gain more of an audience here. Make sure you follow us on social media. The show is available on X, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. Just look up ECW Pod. And then you can follow me personally on X. I am at The Dave Dynasty. The greatest way you can probably support the show is to buy our shirt. Right, we have a This Is Extreme shirt out there. So go to tinyurl.com/ECW Pod shirt. You got a few bucks for Christmas that people are going to give you. You know, go buy a shirt, man, and wear it out there. Not only will you say that you're a fan of the This Is Extreme podcast, it will show everybody that you are an ECW fan and that you are truly extreme. No pun intended. Actually, you know what? Pun intended. So be it. Thank you guys for all your support and listening. Let's take a quick break. And we come back. When we come back, we will have that interview with Michael Archer. So stick around.
Be sure to follow This Is Extreme on all social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for ECW Pod. Be sure to follow us, keep up to date, and join in the discussions. We want to hear your feedback. So find us on all the social media platforms and join the revolution.
All right, and welcome back to This is Extreme. I have a very special guest now. He is a former executive producer and brand director at Ring Sports for Acclaim, Michael Archer. Michael, how are you?
I'm well, Dave. Thank you very much for having me.
You're welcome. This is I'm excited to have you because this is a unique opportunity to kind of get a look into some of the inside workings of the ECW games that Acclaim put out there. But before we get to the games, you've got a background. You're a lifelong wrestling fan. And before your position with Acclaim and anything you did with video games, you actually attended Johnny Rod's wrestling school, correct?
I did. That's where I, met Tommy Dreamer, Big Vito, guys like that. They were our teachers. They took good care of us. It's just I couldn't pull off what they were doing. It was very hard to put something together. And in those days, you were calling it on the fly. And mm-hmm. it was a daunting task. I give those guys credit.
Yeah, but I think that gave you a unique perspective for what you ended up doing. Because you weren't just the typical, you weren't a guy coming from a video game background per se. I mean, you were actually kind of coming from a wrestling background, which I think gave you a unique approach to what you did.
You know what, Dave? It's true, because had I not gone through that, we used to do a lot of grueling shoots for motion capture. And in the old days, we did, remember the Ultimate technology, the blue screen?
Yep.
Well, no matter what happened, you're still hitting that mat over mm-hmm. and over and over again, So what I used to do is I would bring all the tech people in and say, this is called talent appreciation, and we're all going to hit that mat just once, all right? The talent would walk us through it, and it was a crash mat. It was nowhere near a wrestling ring. It was a crash pad.
Yeah.
And after they would be schooled on how to take it, land on the flat of the back, everybody would get up and you could see them kind of like shaking their head out a little bit. And I go, just remember today when things are going long and it's tedious, remember every time how that feels. And they do that day in and day out.
Man, that's great. I wish every fan could get in there. I'm not knocking fans, but I wish they could get in there and take a bump.
Well, you know what, David, it reminds me a lot of that Mike Tyson saying, everybody's got a plan, then they get punched in the face. Well, I always say everybody wants to be Hulk Hogan, and then they take their first bump.
Yeah. I mean, I did some independent wrestling, just small scale stuff in the Midwest, and it's just the simplest of things. It's not so simple.
No, I mean, and you know, it's so funny. You come in and, you got this big sports background, and they tell you, yeah, we're going to give you a 3-minute match. And you're like, 3 minutes? Like, oh, 3 yeah. minutes. I could do like, and then all of a sudden, a minute and a half in, you're like, I can't breathe.
Yeah. Yeah, you're blown up.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very unique. So after WWF or, now WWE, they decided to change lanes. They moved their development to Yuke's. Who approached who to begin the relationship between ECW and Acclaim?
So it's a really interesting, like a round robin type of thing. So at this time, Acclaim had WWE mm-hmm. and THQ had WCW, No Way Out and things like that. Well, they also knew they needed something else. So a development team called Kodiak signed up the rights for ECW, and they were going to publish it through THQ.
Okay.
So what happened was Acclaim loses the WWE license to THQ. EA takes the WCW license, and Acclaim is kind of left holding the bag. So one day, the CEO, president CEO, Greg Fishback, comes down, and he says, do you know anything about these ECW guys? Because he read an article about them in the New York Times. And I said, yeah, I know their owner. I know a lot of their guys. But, Tommy Dreamer was still considered a friend. And if you can find somebody to say a bad word about Dreamer, let me know. But he asked me flat out, can you get these guys in here? Can we speak to them? So I reached out to Dreamer, who was in a truck driving to the show, and I pretty much begged him to put me on the phone with Paul Heyman and just ask for a sit down. So when I spoke to Heyman, he was gracious as heck, and he said, you know, we're pretty close to a deal with Take-Two. We're we like those guys. They're local, and we're doing this. So all I said was, Paul, can you just give us 20 minutes of your time? And later on that weekend, they had a show at the Freeport Rec Center in Long Island, New York, Dave, and I rolled up there with the COO, and we met with Dreamer and Paul Heyman in a preschool cafeteria. And we sat down and we kind of hashed it out. We basically went over it point by point. In the end, Acclaim took a money stake in ECW as well. They bought 19% of the company. But yeah, I just thought it was really crazy the first time you ever is in a, you know, it's not in some big boardroom. We're sitting in these small chairs and small tables, you know. Hey, but that's gaming and that's wrestling, right?
Yeah, right. Yes. Yeah, so you mentioned the stake in ECW that Acclaim. What exactly was that? Was there any mention of kind of the difficult situation ECW had begun to find themselves in? What came with that stake that Acclaim purchased?
So basically, Acclaim did a lot of their back end work. The time Mike Awesome showed up on WCW, we were getting calls saying we need his contract to see, you know, if he's allowed to do this. So we had to have our legal get a hold of it and fax it over to them. We handled a lot of the office stuff, not as much as you would think. Heyman and Dreamer were kind of a two-man road show, and they kind of handled a lot of stuff. But we tried to handle, like, the office stuff, the back-end stuff.
Okay. Gotcha. All right, well, let's talk about the gaming a little bit. So some of these questions have come from listeners of mine, and some huge – I want to give a shout-out to – there's a guy on Instagram called The Extreme Gamer. He helped me come out with a lot of these because he is a huge fan of these ECW games that you guys put out. And he helped me a lot. Yeah.
That's amazing.
He's a huge collector, collects everything associated with these games. So he helped me out. He was like the expert on the games. So I reached out to him, and he helped me with a lot of these because he knows them inside and out. So when deciding on the match types for the games, the Hardcore Evolution and the Anarchy Rules, how was it decided what would make the cut, right? I'm sure you guys threw out a lot of ideals. How's that process work to decide what to put in the game?
We did a lot of focus testing on video game wrestling fans, and then you also had to remember that the ECW fan wasn't the norm. They skewed a little bit higher, so we had to bring in ECW fans. And we took a list and proposed what we thought was the most popular, and we put it in front of Tommy and Paul, and got their buy-in and got their takeaway. You know, we would also kind of quantify things like, hey, this might be tough to pull off, technically. So it might, while it sounds great on paper, you know, back then cage matches were tough to kind of pull off. You know, now it's like a secondary thing, but, you know, the camera going in and out of the cage was always a tough issue.
Right. Well, so then one of the match types was the Inferno match. And where, for the listeners, that to win, a player must be throw their opponents over the top rope into a fiery amount of coals where they would be immediately incinerated.
Yes, sir.
And that's obviously a complete work of fiction and everything else. How did that end up in there? Who came up with it? What was the reaction to that when you said you had to pitch these to Paul and Tommy? So who did you guys pitch this Inferno match, and what did they think when they heard about this?
Well, we did pitch it to Dreamer. He knew that it had just been done in WWE. He said that they hadn't done it in a while. They hadn't really done it. You know, the only thing they had with fire was when Terry Funk threw the rag into the crowd. He was trying not to bring that up again, you know. But we showed him a little bit of how it could play out and how it would work. And they just thought, look, if it's another feature for our fans, let's give them something, you know, extra. You know, and Dreamer and Heyman were the type of guys that were like, well, if you come up with something and the fans like it, maybe we'll try it. We're just happy they didn't try that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how they. I mean, they pulled off a lot of stuff. I don't know how.
Yes, they did.
Done
the, yes,
I don't know how they would have done the Inferno match, but.
Hey, Dave, those guys were 24/7. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
One time we brought in all of our sales reps to get everybody excited about the brand, you know, because we knew we were punching up, and ECW sent 5 or 6 talent, Joey Styles, Paul Heyman. They sent them to our building. We had a wrestling ring, and they put on a few matches for our whole staff and our salespeople. And I'm telling you, you know, it's like anything else. It's the same thing if you're talking about AEW or if you're talking about WWE. When you want to make a sale to a client, you bring them and you see the looks on people's faces. You bring them to the shows, you bring them to the live events, and then you get to introduce them afterwards to the talent. They're bought.
Yeah.
They are in. They bought in immediately because of the whole thing. They get it.
Yeah, so you're saying ECW brought the product to Acclaim.
Yes, they did.
And so there were matches put on just for Acclaim employees.
At our motion capture studio in Glen Cove, Long Island, with all the employees around, especially the sales team, to get them, you know, amped up about going out there and pushing some product.
Yeah. Did it work? I mean, did they get caught up? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's kind of hard not to, you know, when you're blaring Metallica and the people are coming out and they see how great and how hard these guys are working, you know, it was a great time.
Yeah. I mean, that's the kind of stuff, man, you wish you could be a fly on the wall to see that kind of stuff. That's wild.
Well, and I'll tell you, Joey Styles, to this day, I offered to pay Joey Styles to come out and do it, and he wouldn't take any money. He just did it for the brand. And he had to kind of call. It wasn't the usual stuff, right? He had to call the match over like the intercom in the motion capture studio. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
But a true professional. You know, they gave us everything they had. They didn't phone anything in. It was just a great day. I think the talent was it was Doring and Roadkill against Chetty and Nova, and those guys were flying all over the place.
Yeah, that's wild. Yeah, so there was a lot of hype, excuse me, built up in the lead up to Anarchy Rules, right? The second game.
Yes.
Particularly in promotion of drastically improved graphics, improved gameplay, all kinds of other stuff. But what ended up on the shelves on release day was pretty similar to Hardcore Revolution, right?
Yes,
which
sir.
Was in turn very similar to WWF Attitude, WWF Warzone. So was there ever a version of the game? Was there ever any work done being built on a different engine or anything? And if so, what led to the development team just going back to using the foundation of Hardcore Revolution?
Well, it kind of it still goes on today, right? If you look at it, to create a wrestling engine is really expensive. You look at WWE, right? And they seem to have gotten it right, but the first time out, you know, using an internal engine from Visual Concepts, the 2019 game barely worked, right? They went away from Mukes. We decided to stay with what we knew. We had the tech in place. The original idea was first Hardcore Revolution comes out because we had 6 months to put something out. You can't really do a game in 6 months. And then, Lord willing, we kind of switch over. Anarchy Rules goes on to a new engine, new graphics. But that didn't happen because we were still trying to, you know, we were a publicly traded company. It sounds like I'm making excuses because I probably am. that the game had to go out, you know, it had to make its ship date. And we just couldn't put together a new engine and new tech, you know, in that amount of time. That's why I sent you that the cover of Devastation. Mm-hmm. You know, that's the one where we were breaking away from the old Attitude engine and moving on to something new and something different.
Yeah, let's talk about that, right? There was a third ECW game, right? There was the developers of Backyard Wrestling. They were all but signed. It was almost all a done deal, right, to do a third game. It didn't end up coming, right?
Right.
But like what you said, you sent to me, Acclaim had eyes on doing a third game. What kind of development or preliminary work was done on this third game?
So what I showed you was very was more art and graphics, but you know what I The 5-year plan I put in place was to use an in-house team 1 year and then to go outside every other year, you know. So I don't know if you ever heard of Anchor International. I went to the Tokyo Game Show and we met with them. They did a pretty good fighting game. They actually went on to sign a deal with THQ. And if you recall, I believe they did all of the Xbox games for THQ, all the WWE games. So there was a lot of tech done in that. It just the deal fell apart at the very end. Acclaim wasn't doing great. ECW wasn't doing great.
Yeah. Right. And like you said, those things you sent over, if people want to check the social media for the podcast, I'll put those graphics out there. So you sent me over like a kind of a design concept for Tommy Dreamer.
Yes.
It was a little more arcade style, right? A little more.
It was exactly
Street Fighter-ish.
David, almost, exactly. It was less a sim and a little more exaggerated. And look, what those guys were doing were over the top, and we figured let's exemplify that. Let's maximize that. Let's do over the top. Walk away from the sim game fans and try to appeal to more of a Mortal Kombat fight fan.
Yeah, I mean, so were there other how far? What kind of discussions were done on this third game? Was there? I mean, besides just simple match types, was there other stuff being discussed for this third game then to fit into that arcade style, that over the top? Were there, or did it not even get to that point yet?
No, there was some R&D done on the tech. We realized that the in-house team wasn't going to be able to pull that off. That's why I went to the Tokyo Game Show to try to get an outside, developer. And that's where we came up with the idea. So the idea is not – I didn't invent this. It gives them more time to work on the game. So while our in-house developer, Sculptured Software, was working on one game, it would give them a year and a half to do. The outside company would work – and we would never miss time on shelves,
Yeah.
Like I said, we met with this group. It was a great meeting. They had great stuff. In the end, Anchor really didn't – So I worked with Anchor when I, worked at WWE, and their code really didn't translate over to the next gen console. So we were probably lucky we didn't work with them, but it would have been nice because ECW never really. I wish I could have done ECW at Acclaim when Acclaim had its fastball, because we could have done something really good. Those guys were so bought in, they would have done anything. We had a lot of great. Guerrilla marketing. Those guys did a lot of good stuff for us. I mean, once we announced the deal and signed the deal, we showed up at White Plains and we had a truck wrapped in Hardcore Revolution. Guys were driving it around the area, they announced their first pay-per-view there. It was just a great night.
Yeah. So what ended up being kind of the end of the relationship between ECW and Acclaim? And what happened there? Was it who ended that relationship? I mean, was it the financial stuff with ECW that was going on, or what happened there?
So once Acclaim ran into some issues, they started canceling games.
Okay.
ECW started canceling shows. They were on like a similar path.
Yeah.
Right around 2000 is when I was recruited out of Acclaim to go to WWE. And that was when I knew – that's when I had heard both projects were killed.
Okay.
Like the 5-year plan I put in place, they were not going to go with ECW anymore. ECW, basically did a show in Milwaukee where they kind of almost announced they were going out of business.
Yeah.
But for me, it was one of those things where every day I was kind of banging my head on the wall saying, every year I'm coming out with a product that kind of feels like the same product,
Yeah.
And Dave, we hear what the fans are saying. We know that a lot of times your hands are tied. A lot of people want to beat up 2K over, 2K19, or they want to beat up AEW over the latest product. It's not as easy as it sounds. A wrestling engine and wrestling technology is very difficult.
Yeah.
It takes a long time. maybe that's why we stayed so long with Ukes. And when I was at WWE, I fought hard to keep us with Ukes because I knew once you strayed, it could take you off shelves for 2 to 3 years.
Yeah. Gotcha. So there was a rumor that Anarchy Rules was also going to be potted for Nintendo 64. What prevented that?
I think it was just cost cutting, Dave. And
okay.
And at the time, so I don't know if you remember the way things shook out. Sony came out and it came out like gangbusters, and then Nintendo came out and it went crazy.
Yeah.
So a lot of people abandoned Sony, went over to Nintendo because Nintendo gave marketing money. And then there was a shift and everybody had to go scurrying back to Sony. A lot of the N64 games that Acclaim made, I would say maybe 2 or 3 of them were profitable.
Gotcha. So so between the Sony platforms, right, the PlayStation, the Dreamcast, of course, the N64, whatever, what gave you guys the biggest headaches? Was it the N64, like for what you were saying there?
Yeah, you know, Nintendo can be tough to work with, but they come with such a big fan base. You know, their install base is always huge. They have a ton of built-in fan support. Sony could be worked with. They did have a lot of strict policies. They were open and easy to deal with when you had true concerns, right? If you said, hey, this is the way it's got to be, they would work with you. Sega wasn't hard to work with at all. Sega wanted the business, so they were all about it, you know? Yeah. Nintendo, I think, once Nintendo saw the N64 business starting to decline, I think they really got nervous and they started to become a little easier to work with, but people had already migrated back to the PlayStation.
Yeah, and keeping on the Nintendo thing, right? They've kind of always been known to be a little squeamish with, you know, when it comes to like blood and games and such. Did they have issues, you know, with any of the N64, the Game Boy versions of your game with the blood and some of the hardcore matches and different things?
Absolutely, absolutely. They always, if they were going to allow it, it had to be switched off in the options.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And that's how I was able to get blood in games at WWE, because WWE went through a phase where they didn't want blood in the games, and you would try to like show them who we're up against. We weren't up against other wrestling companies. We were up against God of War and Mortal Kombat, you know? Yep. Yep. And to be fair, senior staff at WWE would listen to you and hear you out. And if you could get them to say, yeah, okay, you can have blood, but the parent has to make the decision to go in and turn it on, we'll allow it. You know what I mean? So gotcha. Nintendo was always a little bit stricter in that. And we knew it, you know, even when I was at WWE, our DS games had to be different than, you know, all the other games.
Yeah. And moving on, let's talk about some of the marketing stuff, right? For E3 in 2000, Acclaim had a ring set up with a handful of ECW wrestlers there performing throughout the event. Were you at that event?
I was.
Yeah. So what are your memories of the show and the ECW guys' involvement? The reception of the people attending the event. So just what are some of your memories of that event?
It was tremendous. You know, I think Roadkill put up a picture the other day, a couple weeks back. He still has a picture of it being at E3. And there's a picture with George Foreman because we were making the Foreman boxing. There was another picture, ECW guys and Mary Kate and Ashley. I kid you not.
Yep.
We had matches. I think I remember Chetty diving on Doring. He dove over a kiosk, you know, and and it was like a 10-foot leap, you know, and we had to clear everybody away because it's, you know, it's a lot of free walking. But if you asked those guys flat out and said, hey, guys, can we kick it up a notch a little something? So I know you guys are, because they would do it all day. They would mm-hmm. go, okay, tell us what we can't do. Never once was it, well, we really want to scale back. We asked Rhino to gore Cartman. So he was facing Roadkill, and he put the life-size standee of Cartman in the ring, and he whipped Roadkill in it. He charged Roadkill, and when Roadkill dove out of the way, he nailed it, and he split the styrofoam thing in half. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And then to see those guys, you know, taking pictures, and look, they were so good with the PR, you know, and the sales. So they remember in 2000, when you went to E3, it wasn't just, you know, a fun marketing event. You actually wrote business. So we would bring them in to speak to our sales reps and TRU. How's that? That make you feel old? Toys R Us.
Yeah.
Walmart and things like that.
Yeah. So and speaking of the the E3 event in 2003, right? There was some fan footage that came out a while back. And in this footage, it looks like there are official cameras that are recording the matches. Do you know anything about this footage? What happened to it? Was it ECW cameras, Acclaim cameras, E3 cameras? Do you know anything about that?
I would think it was Acclaim cameras for B-roll. You know, we had a PR group that was really great at putting that stuff together, and if they could get their hands on it, it you know, went a long way. ECW didn't send any of their TV crew, you know?
Okay. Yeah.
Ron and Charlie didn't come, so that's how I know it wasn't ECW.
Yeah. Man, it'd be great if that I'm sure that footage is lost amongst the shuffle and the buyouts and the different things over the years. Who knows where it is if it's still there.
It's right. It could be in a basement in Glen Cove right now.
Yeah. I mean there's been wilder things that have come to light. So maybe someday someone will stumble across and be, hey, look at this, and maybe we'll get to see it. That'd be something.
That would be.
Yeah. So amongst the two games and all your work, was there ever anybody wrestler wise that you thought wanted to be in the game, planned to be in the game, but that had to be removed? I mean, whether it be due to a contract, leaving the company, is there anything that pops to mind about anything like that?
No, I think, I remember, unfortunately, Louis Spicoli passing away, but I remember Tommy Dreamer handling that. He worked through his Louis sister. He got the approval on his likeness and things like that. Usually, our biggest issue with ECW, and you know, you'll read it, it was we couldn't replicate their music. You know, when it's commercial music, that would shoot our whole budget. So when you go into it, a lot of ECW, you know, was based on how great the music was, and that kind of led you into the next thing. It just built from there. The music was the jumping off point. So, you know, we took a lot of hits on we didn't have the licensed music. That I would say, if I had one thing to do over again, I would try to get more budget and work through that.
Yeah, that was actually my next question. Is I know in Anarchy Rules, right? You guys use Dopes Debonair. So there was, I mean, I'm assuming then what you're saying, there wasn't really the budget, the ability to even think about pursuing any of the other music and some of these licensed songs to use in the game for the themes. Because, right, they all, with some of Polly's smoke and mirrors with what he did, you know, everybody had an actual licensed song that they used for instance, right? And you guys weren't able to use those. But so I'm guess what you're saying is, it wasn't really pursued because you just knew it wasn't in the budget. If you could, you would have pushed it a little more.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So even when I was at WWE, we had started to discuss an ECW game. And in the very first meeting, I said, before we do anything, who's going to be negotiating with Metallica and Soul Coughing and things like that? And they were like, well, we're going to create our own music. I was like, well, we're already, you know, going to be on the negative. You know, the fans want their music. When I was at Acclaim and I was dealing with WWE, we got the music as a pass-through. So once you signed the license, everything just came to you. It didn't work like that. So, yeah, we signed Dope, the Debonair song. And they had a pretty good relationship with Paul. They were easy to work with. We did some stuff with Concrete Marketing. We had a music guy, Rick Fox, out in Cincinnati, did some work with their music people. I honestly feel, Dave, that the music budget would have outweighed the product development budget.
Yeah. Right. And of course, I mean, yeah, you have to balance that out. What's in the grand scheme, what's more important there?
Right.
So I'm sure, I mean, as far as the claims, you know, side of things. Now let's talk about official game related type merchandise, right? I talked about Extreme Gamer. He collects all the promotional stuff. He's got all kinds of stuff, right? And he was telling me that there's a couple of t-shirts, some bandanas, foam fingers, some promotional materials out there. What all do you recall as far as promotional type materials put out there for the game or anything maybe that didn't make the cut that was maybe discussed?
I know one of my favorite things was there was an ECW coffee mug and there was also an ECW squeeze ball. Remember those stress balls you used to have them at your desk?
Yeah.
Those were two of my favorites. The shirts were terrific, but Acclaim did a really good job. You know, if you ever see the Mortal Kombat shirts and NBA Jam shirts, they did a great job with that. And what I could tell you is the ECW guys, they would wear it on television, which you don't realize is huge. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just you see a blip in your sales when somebody did it. So that was pretty big. The baseball caps did well, you know. They always had those flat hats, you know. I'm trying to think of what else we did. We did the two strategy guides, I believe. With forwards written by some of the talent. You know, what would be nice is that that ECW Hardcore Revolution truck, you know.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell you. I was shocked when I saw it. Like, I was so in the middle of the negotiations and in and out that when I showed up that night, I was looking. I was like, is that ours or is that theirs? I couldn't, you know, like, did they have one of these made and wrapped? And it was neat. But I'd never seen it after that.
Yeah. So was that from the Acclaim side?
It was from the Acclaim side, and it was basically like a marketing mobile. You just drove around the blocks, any of the shows, gave out, you know, marketing collateral. We went at it. We tried to go at it the way ECW went at it, very guerrilla, very, you know, down to earth, more on the renegade side.
Yeah, and you mentioned the coffee mug and the stress balls of. So what were those things that were like given out at events, kind of like the E3 were?
Yeah.
And in talks with guys and stuff, just stuff given out to them?
Yep. The tchotchkes that were given out, you know, like when the reps or somebody came in or if we brought in, you know, retailers, they would get a bag and in it would be something from Iggy's Wrecking Balls or something from, you know, NBA Jam and then the ECW mug. You know, we tried to give it a full slate.
Yeah. So is there anything that you got from those days that that it's kind of important to you or sentimental to you?
All I have is from ECW is the game that I have. I do have a lot of Acclaim stuff that's not related to ECW because I really and truly loved my time there.
Yeah.
But the majority of it is not ECW.
Yeah, and again, I know we've talked a lot about ECW, but just a touch, you did move on, right? And then, and like you said earlier, you went on to WWE. How did that come about, and what did you do for WWE?
So, right around 2000, when I knew we weren't going to be doing ECW, I knew I wanted to work in gaming. I knew I wanted to work in wrestling gaming. WWE kind of recruited me out and slid me into their consumer product group, which is licensing, consumer products, gaming. They just signed the deal with THQ. Now companies have gaming divisions. They didn't really have one of those then. So I kind of took on a role of licensing and product development and brand assurance. I was there a good 15 years and saw a lot of good things, a lot of great things, had a lot of fun, you know. Did a lot of amazing things. I wish we could have made better products for everything other than the Sony, but the Sony was really just it had a great legacy to it, you know?
Yeah. And I don't discuss a lot about the WWE revival of ECW, but you were there through those years and you said earlier that there was talks, or you kind of pushed maybe for an ECW branded WWE game. So when WWE purchased, you know, the library and so forth of ECW, did that kind of pull at your heartstrings a little bit and your you know, kind of your memories?
Yeah, because, you know, I was kind of knee deep in it, you know.
Yeah.
I was part of one of the reasons that, you know, Acclaim was working with ECW, and it did. But when they once I'd heard that WWE was buying ECW, I knew that was coming. So I started to, you know, put together a list of talent. You know, I knew it couldn't. I wouldn't be able to sell an ECW game that didn't have the authentics, you know,
yep.
the fans, especially with ECW. If you aren't authentic with ECW fans, they would smell you out in a heartbeat and you'd lose them.
Yeah. And so when you were doing this, I mean, did you pitch this to WWE? What was the reception like?
They were very interested in it. We couldn't get the publisher to go for it, you know?
Okay, yeah.
The publisher couldn't make the revenue work. You know, to make a game these days, you know, is $10 million, $15 million. And then, you know, then you have to put marketing into it and things like that. And, you know, ECW hadn't even, you know, launched yet.
Yeah.
So, you know, what did we do? We kind of added them in. You know, we kind of added them into the big brand, SmackDown versus Raw, and we kind of used ECW as a violator and put their logo in there and had them, you know, had their roster added to that. We wanted to see how it would do, how it would test.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I had kind of had a feel, you know, coming full circle for you to be 100. Working with, yeah, with the ECW name again.
100%.
Yeah, and more recently, you consulted on the Retromania game, which has some ECW guys there, some Blue World Order, a couple, I think Dreamer's in there, a couple other guys.
Yep.
Tell us a little bit about that game.
Sure. You know, I'd left WWE, kind of felt like I was doing the same stuff over and over again, you know, kind of like when I was out of Acclaim. And I got an email from a guy saying, hey, you want to consult on my, you know, 2D retro wrestling game. And right away I started to get nervous because you say 2D retro wrestling and you're like, where's this money coming from? But we sat, he was a terrific guy. He was an accountant. So he knew to keep his eye on the money. So did I. And I told him right away, I go, you know, I got guys that when we sign guys like Meanie and Stevie and Dreamer, and Nova, we don't just sign them because we know, you know, the fans, we know that they're going to help push us. You know what I mean? And
yep.
We didn't have a lot in terms of marketing budget. So everything we got was through those guys or Morrison or somebody, you know, activating on social media. You know, the big one we got, you know, was bringing in Myers and Cardona, and those guys kind of lit up.
Yep.
You know, social media. But that was because I had ties to him from my days at WWE.
Yeah. I mean, and for what you did, it was kind of a, I don't even know how to put it, like a very underground kind of hit, right? I mean, you guys got an at-home, I think, one of the one-up style cabinets out of it. It's on the
iArcade. Yeah. We did it for, you know what? It started out, Dave, to be like Nintendo and Steam. And then Sony wanted in. And then Microsoft wanted in. I would love to sit here and tell you that it's a 10-rated game and we made millions and we all bought islands. It sold well. it rated well.
Yeah.
I'm really proud of it because independent games rarely make it to shelves or to Steam or to – but this came out and it did pretty well. And it came out – you know, we were working on it during COVID. We had some guys that just – had their nose to the ground. That's why I can't say enough about Mike Herman and Tommy Dreamer and the Blue World Order. Those guys just went out and pushed.
Yeah. I mean, it is a unique position now, right? Because it's not all about necessarily a physical media, right? You have the ability to just, you know, hit those stores like the Switch store, the the PlayStation Store, right? And you don't have to rely so much on the physical media, which can help your bottom line with your cost, I'm assuming.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, I mean, I have it on my Switch, right, as a download, and it's a fun game.
We tried really hard to give everybody a little piece of, you know, hey, you want old NWA? We got Nikita. You want ECW? We got Tommy. You want New Japan? We have Jeff Cobb. You know, we tried really hard to kind of spread. And like I said, our budgets were very small, and we were good with that. You know, we weren't going to make excuses. We knew what we were getting into, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I was really proud of how it. And look, we had some long nights trying to figure out when should we release. You know, should we miss our marketing dates to make it better? There was a lot of that going on.
Yeah, and I think it played up on one of the hottest marketing tools nowadays, which is nostalgia. Not only for the names in the game, but right, it was in that kind of that WrestleFest old WWF style of a video game, which, you know, really hits home for guys, you know, my age who remembers playing that arcade game.
And that's what that was supposed to be, Dave. We worked with Arc Systems, and we did license their signage.
Yeah.
Because in the beginning we were saying it's a spiritual successor, and then we said it's the official successor.
Right. Yeah. And that, I mean, again, that's a good thing. To me, it's a good selling point, because like I said, kids my age, guys my age that were kids when that's out now are, you know, now are adults with their own money. So it's a good audience to try to hit. So coming out of that, what are you up to currently? Are you kind of just enjoying life, or not working so much, or what all you got going on now?
So I've just been doing some consulting. I'm looking to get back into full-time work. You know, the gaming industry is going through some changes right now and some, you know, growing pains because of COVID. But, you know, I got my ear to the ground. I keep my eye on what AEW does and what, you know, WWE's got going on. I keep an eye on NWA with Billy Corgan.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure to check out New Japan, see what they're doing. But yeah, just looking. I'm on the prowl for my next big opportunity, but enjoyed my time so far.
Yeah, and it's got to be ECW is that brand that never dies, right? I mean, I know WWE owns it; it's always out there. But no matter what the wrestling show, the wrestling program, whatever it is, right? You have these guys like, you know, RVD still out there doing it, right? Dreamer's still out there doing it. Rhino, these guys pop up all over the place. And that chant, that ECW chant pops up everywhere. And anytime you're checking this out and you see one of these guys or hear this chant, it's got to make you smile just a little bit, right? For your time working with ECW and your time with Acclaim.
Oh, man, absolutely. You know, Taz and the Dudleys and, you know, Dreamer runs a lot of shows up in Westchester that I'll try to get out to. But it's just like you said, it's old home week seeing those guys, you know. But it's imperative that people realize, you know, ECW kind of led the way.
Yeah.
For the Attitude Era, you know, they kind
absolutely
of inspired it. And WWE kind of perfected it, that type of thing.
Yeah. And and speaking, you know, of Hardcore Revolution, Anarchy Rules, for whatever, you know, whatever they are, whatever was put out there, the faults, the blemishes, the good, the bad, whatever it is, it's still so nostalgic, like I said, for guys like me who were ECW fans during that time, to just say, hey, there's this little promotion that started in the Northeast, that here's a video game, right? This is, you know, our promotion. These are our guys in a video game. And it's fun, right? It's fun to look back and know that was accomplished, and what all they did. It's fun. I mean, you know, every once in a while I'll still play those games, and it still brings back that same feeling. And
I'm really proud of that work. You know,
yeah.
Once ECW came through the door, and you saw their work ethic and their attitude towards things, and they didn't have this huge engine behind them, it was really easy to kind of get on board, you know. And it was, like I said, whatever you needed, if you said, hey, we need guys, okay, we need people, all right, you know, can somebody jump on a phone call tomorrow at 6 a.m.? Sure.
Yep. Yeah. And that's, you know, it's one of the things I've always praised everything I do about ECW, right? It's that everybody pitched in, did their part. You know, I mean, you, you had guys doing multiple jobs behind the scenes.
Yes.
That were, you know, Taz helping with merchandise, Dreamer helping with pretty much everything.
Nunzio was doing a lot. Nunzio was doing a lot of work behind the scenes.
Yeah, all these guys pitching in, doing their part. It was truly the mom and pop organization. Everybody, a family feeling that grew to what it was, and it's special. I think it's lightning in a bottle. I don't think it'll ever happen again.
I don't know how it can. It was just a perfect mixture. But it also goes to show you the genius of Paul Heyman. You know what I mean? And Tommy's calming influence, and then you forget, how dynamic Rob and Sabu were, and how different they were at the time. One of my favorite stories is I brought the other president and CEO of Acclaim. I brought him to another show they did in Freeport. Mm-hmm. And we go back to the locker room to speak to Paul and Dreamer. And I have the president, CEO. He's just very nice, reserved guy, Paul Eibler. And we're talking. And as we're talking, I believe Rob Van Dam is gluing Lance Storm's eyes shut, like with crazy glue. And I'm like mid-sentence, and I have to like steady myself because I – it might have been the other way around. Dave, they did the spot where they threw the chair back and forth.
Yeah.
And then one of them does the spin kick. But whoever caught it low. So when the spin kick hit, the top went right above the eye and got him good. So when they were closing, you have to shut the eye tight. And it was I'm telling you, I was like mid-sentence talking about royalties and all this other stuff. And next thing you know, I was like, hold on. I need to – hold on. But – you know what? That's the business, right?
It is, yeah. And it's it's funny. Some of the best stories is how this wild world of wrestling and how it ties into some of the other business worlds and how it. I mean, it makes so much money, right, on the big level, and it's such a big thing, right? But it's still this crazy world.
Yes.
It's fun, and it's why it sticks with us. That's why we get, everybody tell these stories and these memories, because it's unlike anything else. And ECW was, even more unlike anything else within this already preposterous world. So,
What's so funny is when ECW first started, there was almost like a groundswell, and
yeah.
I don't know if I saw the marketing. But there was a guy on my team, his name is Peter Wan, and he kept saying, you got to keep your eye on these guys. You got to keep your eye on these guys. There's something there, it's really like something tangible. And I remember being like, all right, well, let me. And he was right. I found myself. So in New York, you could record it at like 3 a.m. on MSG Network,
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I couldn't wait to wake up the next morning and watch it before I went into work.
Yeah. Yeah, it's funny because, the entire span of ECW pretty much runs the span of the 90s, right? They only got a year or two into the 2000s, and they started like 92, 93. And that's fitting because the ECW encompasses the 90s so much. From the music, the style, the feel, this everything, it's appropriate that it is one of those things you would put up on a poster board when you're talking about the decade of the 90s. It fits.
Yes. Very, very well said. It fits,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it's and like I said, it's very nostalgic. It's why I do this podcast. But Michael, it's been great having you on. And like I said, you have a complete side that's, I talk to a lot of wrestlers and this and that, but you have a side with these games that's, I couldn't get from anybody else. And it's fascinating because ECW that's part of it, right? The games, the music, the CD releases, the shirts.
Yeah.
And people want to hear all about all of it, and they're passionate about all of it. So it's great to have you on. It's great to hear your side of it, the Acclaim side, that side of it. Because like I said, those games, you call them what you will, for people that love wrestling, for people that love ECW, they're important. It's great to hear your side of it. And I appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. Listen, I'm very fortunate. Like I said, I tried it. it was not in the cards for me. I knew it. The best thing I could tell you is a guy like Dreamer, you know, decided to remain in contact with me because that's the type of guy he is. We were able to, you know, work something out, like I said, at the Freeport Rec Center. You know, however it was done, it was done. And I'm really proud of the work. I'm really proud of the time I got to spend with those guys. Look, it was a great time. You know, the gaming business was going through some changes, but, you know, wrestling was, there were three hot, you know, promotions at the time. That was a lot of fun.
Yep. And again, I think it's just part of that perfect storm of ECW at the time period. I mean, it, even like you said, even with the video games and the time period, what was happening there, it was just all, everything aligned and hit at the same time to create, like we said, this lightning in a bottle that'll never be, you know, matched again. It was unique.
It's very unique. And that, look, you can't say that about too many groups like that. ECW was definitely, I believe, the first and probably the last.
Yep, I agree. All right. Well, thank you, Michael. Again, thank you for coming on, talking to me. This has been great. It's been great chatting with you. Again, we could talk for hours just on other non-related game things, I'm sure, and just go on and on. And I think that's what makes it so special is, again, you have that passion for wrestling. And I think that was important to bring from that side to have that made everything what it was. So
thank you, Dave. I appreciate it.
Support This Is Extreme and buy the This Is Extreme shirt. Show the world that you are part of the revolution and that you support our podcast and the history of ECW. Go to tinyurl.com/ECW pod shirt and buy yours today.
All right, and thank you for listening to this episode of This Is Extreme. Thank you to Michael Archer for coming on. That was a great interview. What did I tell you guys? It was a great interview, so informative, so fascinating. And I feel like, you know what, I'm going to talk to Michael again sometime because I feel like there's so much more that I could discuss with him. Now, once again, guys, thanks for being a fan. Thanks for helping spread the word. Make sure you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform. Make sure you follow us on social media. Stay engaged with us. Stay sharing our posts, our episodes, everything else. Help us network. Help us grow. Help us tell the world that this ECW podcast is out there. There are several really good ECW podcasts, and a lot of them, the majority of them, perhaps, probably all of them, maybe, if they're not from a talent that was involved in ECW, if they're from a fan side, right, they're review shows, and those are great. And, you know, like I said, you know, Reliving the Extreme is a favorite of mine. So once again, I'm going to plug them. If you want a companion podcast to what I do here and someone who does a show-by-show review of ECW television and the super shows and everything else, supercards, go follow and listen to them. But I think that I have a different approach, right? In doing the interview-based ECW history podcast, I think we bring a whole new dimension, a whole new side, and I'm pretty proud of that. So thank you for your support, and just continue to tell people and help us grow. We will be back in 2 weeks with another great episode. I'm not exactly sure who I'm going to have on that. I've got a couple really great episodes, interviews lined up that are really, really great. They're, again, you know, ones with talent, ones with more of a production side. Well, he's a talent. I'm not even going to say anything because these are great interviews that I've got set up, and I'm not sure which one I'm releasing next, so just watch the social media. We'll announce that soon, but the episode will be coming in 2 weeks. But until then, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep it extreme.